thanks. I'm Ashley. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ashley.
My sobriety date's November 8th of 2005. I just recently got to celebrate 8 years, which is absolutely amazing, and that's only because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, strong but loving sponsorship, and a God of my understanding, which I have found through this program, through my sponsor, through people in these rooms, and this book right here. Thank you, Sam, for asking me to come out and talk. It's always an honor and a privilege. I do get nervous, which I think we all do. I always like to have attention all on me. I'm an only child, and I just always want attention on me, but now that I have it, you know, it's like, oh, I don't really want it. But good or bad, and good, bad, or indifferent, I always like to have attention. And I know that I'm not alone in that situation. I spoke to my sponsor on the way up here. She lives in Alaska. That's where I got sober. And so it was a 4-hour time difference, and I was like really trying to make sure that I could get in touch with her before I came to speak, because I always like, you know, she calms my heart, and I love her. She's absolutely saved my life, and I'm forever grateful to her and for all the people in the program. So in a general way, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and I can tell you it's very different from the beginning to now. It's completely different. Growing up, I always felt different. I never felt a part of. I know I had alcoholic, the alcoholism was on me from get-go. I like to have my way, and I will do whatever I can do to get my way and to get what I want. I remember when I was little, I don't remember this, my mom told me. Actually, I do remember this. I was in preschool, and my mom made me wear this outfit, and I hated it. I hated this outfit. I thought it was so ugly. But when I was in preschool, and you would just bring an extra set of clothing with your to send with them because, you know, when you're in preschool, you have accidents. So I wet my pants on purpose to change so I could change the outfit because I didn't like the outfit. No mind the humiliation of having to be changed in front of my preschool class, but I didn't like that outfit, and so I was going to change. So I wet my pants so I could change my outfit. I know that now to be alcoholic. Also spoiled rotten. I was a spoiled child. But only because my family loved me. I mean, they loved me so much, and I'm so grateful for that. My parents got divorced before I was born. My mom is a good Al-Anon and didn't want me to have to go through the divorce, so she took care of that before I was born. So I didn't know my dad. He wasn't in the picture. But I have two grandparents that, my mom's parents, that absolutely, they are the most important people in the world to me. They are my most favorite people, and I spent so much time with them, and they loved me, and they both got to see me get sober. And I'm so grateful for that because it would just be so much hurt on my heart if they had gone and not been able to see me become the woman that they always knew that I could be. I am a crier, so this is just a warning. I am a crier. My home group in Alaska always would make fun of me because I would cry. Like, sometimes I would even cry, like, reading the traditions sometimes, but, you know, they just love me anyway. I took my first drink when I was 13. It was at a UVA-UNC football game. It was peppermint schnapps. I have not had peppermint schnapps since that time. You know, and I intuitively knew that I wanted to be at the fraternity parties. I don't know how. At 13 years old, never have been to a college campus, and I knew I wanted to be at the fraternity parties. But they were having fun, and there were boys there. So that's where I wanted to be. Obviously, I didn't get to go to the fraternity parties because I was with my mom at the football game. But I got really mad. And the next time I drank, I was still 13, and I was at a friend's house, and the parents left, and which now I think about this, I'm like, God, it's so horrible. The mom, she bought the girls' wine coolers and the guys' beer, and then she would go out for the whole night. And now I think about that, and I'm like, that was awful. Like, that was horrible. But then it was so cool. It's like, we had the whole house, and I remember taking my shirt off and running around with my bra on, and like, I just got attention. Wasn't good attention. Well, I mean, I guess it was kind of good attention, but, you know, and that's how I acted. I mean, I don't act like a lady. I don't act like, certainly didn't act like a 13-year-old, and that's not how I was raised. I have My father's parents both died from alcoholism. They died on the bathroom floor. So there were nights when my mom would come home and I was on the bathroom floor, and it would just break her heart because she knew, because she could see that. She could see that that was the path that I was going down, and I didn't care. Just leave me alone, please. Just leave me alone. Just leave me alone and let me lay on this floor because it was cool and it made me feel better. And, you know, I had a lot of fun drinking. I had so much fun drinking, and I could breathe, I could come out and play with you guys, and because I was always just right here, just up in my head. I never felt like I fit, and I had lots of friends, but I didn't feel like I fit in with them, and they were talking about me, or, you know, they were jealous of me, or whatever. It just, I never felt like I fit, and like when I would never finish things. I'm a great starter, but I'm not a good finisher, and it's amazing that I've actually been able to stay consistent in one thing for 8 years. That absolutely shows that there's a God, that there's something greater than me that has come into my life and allowed me to show up in my life. You know, there are relationships. I always like to have a guy because that makes me better, because anything that I can focus on, that's going to take me out of me. And if I have a guy, then I feel better. You know, I have the disease of more. I want more of everything. I like to shop. I like to eat. I like everything and nothing in moderation. It's just not ingrained in me. So I always had boyfriends, and in high school I hung out with the people who drank like I did. I didn't know that my drinking was any different. I had no idea, because I was drinking like they did. I mean, we put a cooler in the trunk and just drive around. And at that time, like, I grew up in Richmond. I'm from Richmond. That's where I grew up. I lived in Short Pump, which is not anything like it is now. If any of y'all are familiar with it, I mean, it was country road. I mean, we got stuck in the snow when I was in the fifth grade, and we were there for 3 hours before another car passed us. And it was on Broad Street, right where the Walmart is now, along with every other shopping store that you want to go in. But, you know, we would put a cooler in the trunk and fill it with beer and Strawberry Hill and Cisco and Mad Dog and whatever we could get our hands on from the beer place, the BP station. We called it the beer place because they didn't ID us. And so when we would just drive out to Goochland and just drive or just park in a cul-de-sac or whatever, we would just drink, or whoever's house was having a party. And, you know, I think about it now, I'm like, God, it was pretty crazy. I mean, I don't know how, I know how we got away with it, because if they carded us, I had a fake ID, which I used to say that I didn't use it to buy alcohol, that I used it to buy cigarettes, but I was 18 before they changed the smoking age to 18, so I know that that's a lie, that's not true, that I didn't just use it to buy cigarettes, I used it to buy alcohol. But it was convenient that I had that fake ID. My boyfriend at the time went to jail for a really long time because he broke into the DMV in Saluda and stole the seals, which is why the state of Virginia changed their driver's license from the seals to the, like, whatever ones they changed it to. Because there were so many out there that the cops couldn't, like, regulate them. So I picked good ones. And so, you know, I just drank like everybody else. And I didn't have any consequences when I was younger. You know, I didn't really have any consequences except for inside consequences. It just made me feel dark and bad. And I never went to jail for a DUI. I should have many times. Because I drove many times where I should not have been driving. I did well in school up until the fourth grade, which I didn't realize. I know. The first time I said that, I was like, my sponsor was like, you know, it's pretty easy to do well in school up until the fourth grade. And I'm like, well, but I did. I mean, like, I was great in reading until the fourth grade. And I remember this, and I had a resentment against this teacher. She was on my first four step. I had never seen the word mosquito spelled. And I was reading out loud, and I said mosquito. And the whole class, including the teacher, laughed at me, and I was crushed. And from that point on, and I did not like to read. I did not like to read. I didn't like to get up in front of people because it was just that all eyes were on me, and I'm going to mess up, and I'm going to screw up, and then everyone's going to hate me. Like, I'm that important. But I think that I'm that important, and that I have that much control and power over things, and I absolutely don't. I'm an average. I'm average. I'm just average at everything. Like, I just do enough just to get by in school, and I did, I graduated barely. I graduated very averagely, but I did not do some, whatever your term paper is, that what you do in English for years? I didn't do my term paper, and somehow I got away with not doing it, but still graduating. I don't know how. And I went to Mary Baldwin in Stanton, Virginia, which is not too far from here. And it was the only school I applied to, and I really wanted to go there. I loved that school because my cousin went to Hampton, Sydney, and I did a lot of partying in Hampton, Sydney. And so that's the brother college. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll just go there because then I can go to Hampton, Sydney all the time. And not once did I think about school. I'm just thinking about partying and going to fraternity parties. And I had so much fun in Hampton, Sydney. So much fun there. I mean, we would drink. Like, I remember the first time I stayed up over, like, that I stayed up for 24 hours and just drank, and we would hit, like, beer bottles off the deck with golf clubs, and that doesn't sound like a lot of fun now, but it was really fun then, and, no, but we had fun. They had good music came, and I could drink, and I could have fun, and I could drink. I mean, it was at a fraternity house, and so they were drinking like I was drinking, and didn't ever come to mind that I'm a girl, and I shouldn't be drinking like this, and I shouldn't be behaving like this, but I did it anyway. And because of that, I was only there for 3 semesters. They asked me not to come back, and because, you know, I don't think, I maybe went to class a handful of times, but every time I went, I was like, oh, everybody here knows something that I don't know. You know, like, they know what to do, and I don't know what to do, and they know what they want to do with their life, and I have no idea what I want to do with my life. I have no idea what God wants me to do. I have no idea what I want to do, and everybody else did. That's what I have felt like my whole life, that everybody else has that, they know. They have that little bit of knowledge about themselves, or that they know what to do, and I have no idea what to do. I just don't know, and I don't know how to find out. So I went, you know, it's just college, and then I came to VCU in Richmond, and I got into a sorority, and it was the drinking sorority, and so that was really fun, and I could fit there, but I didn't go to school. Like, I just never, like, got that part, like, you go to college, so you can get a degree and have a job and grow up, and, you know, I would much rather my family take care of me, or find a boyfriend or a man that's going to take care of me, because I don't really like to take care of myself. Kind of lazy. And I'm spoiled, and just do for me what I don't want to do for me. Not what I can do, but what I just don't want to do. I just would like to, you know, and even now, I mean, it's nice to just stay at home and not do anything on the couch, just lay and watch TV all day. I know that I'm an alcoholic because alcohol does for me what it does not do for normal people. I put a drink in me. And it's that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once from taking that drink. And, God, if you felt like I felt when I took that drink, you would drink too. And I also, I used to say that I had a low tolerance to the first drink, but I could drink a whole lot more, and I would explain that to my friends, and they were like, what? I'm like, you know, I feel more drunk when I take my first drink. Like, I can feel it. I can feel it every part of my body, that warm feeling that comes over me. And then I don't want to drive after that first drink. But then after a couple more, I'm okay, and then I can drive and do whatever and go to wherever I want to go. And they're like, I don't get that. And I didn't figure it out until I was in Alcoholics Anonymous that's because my body is different. I have an allergy, and it manifests, alcohol is different. It manifests in my body different than it does somebody else. Like, I'm also allergic to shrimp, which is new. I haven't always been allergic to shrimp, but I get lumps on the back of my tongue, so I don't eat shrimp because I don't want to have these lumps on the back of my tongue. But alcohol, that, you know, I mean, I thought that was weird when I first got here, and like, you have an allergy. I'm like, that's stupid. That's just an excuse for people who can't drink. They say, oh, I'm allergic, but I'm allergic. I'm allergic to alcohol, and I have that mental obsession that I just can't get away from it. Like, I don't take that away from me. And I have one, and I think about the next one, and I think about the next one, and I better have more at home, because, you know, you can't buy alcohol after midnight, and the bars close at whenever they closed, or whenever they kicked me out, which is usually how it would happen. It got towards the end. I just wouldn't leave. I do that a lot. I don't leave places when it's time, way past the time for me to leave. I also, drugs, I know that this is Alcoholics Anonymous. I am an alcoholic. I know that I'm an alcoholic. Drugs are part of my story, and drugs got me to Alcoholics Anonymous faster. I absolutely know that because I didn't go to treatment for alcohol. I went to treatment for the drugs that I was doing. And the drugs that I was doing allowed me to drink so much more than normal, because I am pretty much a lightweight. You know, and I'm grateful for that, because I know I could have been out there drinking a whole lot longer than I was. So, you know, I love recovery. I love my life today. I love that I've been given the chance to have a different life. And I know that I destroyed my life by drinking and doing the things that hurting the people that I hurt and behaving the way that I behaved. I stole a lot of money, mostly from family and friends, because I didn't think that they would get me in trouble. Like, they wouldn't turn me into the police. My mom's not going to, you know, turn me into the cops. I could walk into the bank and give them their Social Security number, and they would give me a counter check, and I would just take money from her account. And she could go in the bank the next day and tell them, do not let her take money out of my account. And I could go back in the next day and somehow convince them to give me more money. And I'm not proud of that, but that's just who I was. I mean, I was that, I could just convince anybody to do what I wanted them to do. And I did. I stole a lot of money from my mom. I did steal money from an employer. And this is how my brain works. Instead of taking money, like, from the register, I would just take the whole bank bag, the whole deposit bag. And there was no, I'm like, well, it's just gone. I don't know where it went. Like, will you close the store? I don't know where it went. I was there when I left. You know, and, like, really, I thought that they would, that would just go over. And I didn't, I mean, I have made amends for that, but I didn't get caught. I mean, there wasn't any way that they could prove it. And I knew that there was no way that they could prove it. They're not going to fingerprint. You know, they're not going to, and I had the whole bag. And I looked at it like this, like, there were checks in there also, and I never, of course, I couldn't cash the checks because they were written to that business. So I'm like, well, you know, those people just got that product for free. Like that's good me. Nice me. I'm being, like, Robin Hood. And I think that, like, God, that's just, but that was normal. Like, I didn't think that there was anything then. I didn't, because I just needed that money to get what I needed to get, and I needed to get booze, and my whole paycheck was gone because I had already spent that on booze and not paying bills. That was the last thing on my mind, was to pay the things that were important to pay, that were necessary to pay. So the last time I stole money from a friend, I wrote checks to myself. Like, that was very easy to tell who stole that money, and it was a lot of money. And he called me and he said, so you're going to pay this back, right? And I'm like, and so I called my mom, and she's like, no, nope, I'm done. I'm not paying for you. You can either go to jail, or you can go to the Karen Foundation, or at the time I was seeing a doctor, and he has a wilderness therapy program, and she said, or you can go to Blackwater. Camping to me is in a trailer, like a camper, like comfort camper, not in a tarp or a tent out in the woods. And, you know, God stepped in, and I said, I want to go to Blackwater. And so I did 21 days in the woods. It was myself, and the only other female was one of the counselors, and I was with seven guys who were coming off heroin, and I'm coming off of 3 years straight cocaine and alcohol. I was not the person that they really wanted to be around. I was like, I was good and crazy. And I hiked, I rock climbed, and I backpacked for 21 days in the woods, and it was so great because I was doing things that I'd never done before. I'm like, oh, I feel okay without drugs and alcohol in my system. I'm okay. I can do this. And then they threw this at me that I had to go to a 90-day extended care facility in Prescott, Arizona with all women. I don't like women at all. And I was for sure that I was going to leave and go there and leave with more problems than I went in with, because, you know, there are people there that had eating disorders and all other things, and I was so full of judgment. I'm like, I don't want to be around those people because I'm certainly not like that. So my mom had kind of caught on, and she had been going to Al-Anon, and she had my suitcase packed for me when I got back from that 21-day treatment. She did say, she told me, she was like, I was going to pretend that we were going to a spa in Arizona. And I'm like, I knew where the treatment center was. I'm not that dumb. I mean, like, I knew that that's where I was going. And so I did. And they put me in this, I flew out there, and I'm like, oh, great. Oh, they had also put my car, had my car oil changed in my car, so the car was at the shop, like, so I couldn't get to it, I was going to just go get in the car and go. I don't know where I was going, but I was going somewhere, and it wasn't going to be to treatment. But, you know, then again, God stepped in and did for me what I couldn't do for myself, and so I went. And they introduced me to my roommate, who was this 45-year-old female alcoholic, and she kind of looked like my mom, and I'm like, no. nope, not going, don't put me in the room with her. I'm not an alcoholic. I don't want to be around alcoholics. This is going to be horrible. I'm not doing this. This is not why I'm here. I'm here for drugs. Put me in a room with some people that do drugs. And they were like, nope, this is where you're staying. And she was absolutely my first angel in this program. She became my best friend, and she was wonderful. I mean, she absolutely saved my life, and I'll get to that. After they let me come home for Christmas, and I reconnected with the boyfriend who had broken up with me, and he's like, you know, I knew something was wrong with you, and I didn't know how to fix you. Please, when you get out, come home and live with me. So I did. At that point, I had stopped doing drugs, but I was still drinking. And it got really crazy. It got violent. I was violent. He was violent. And the woman that I had lived with in Arizona in treatment, she was also a domestic violence and substance abuse counselor. So he came to the house one night and was in a blackout rage, and I was completely wasted, and he beat me up pretty bad, and he kicked my dog. You don't kick my dog. But I felt like this big, so I couldn't call the police. And I mean, because, you know, I felt like I deserved that. Like, I deserved to be treated like that. And they're certainly not going to come, and then they'll see how drunk I am, and they'll just write it. They'll just, like, write it off. And she sat on the phone with me until I called the police. And the police came, took a report, whatever. That all happened. And she, when the police were gone, she on the phone, she said, I want you tomorrow. I want you to book a flight. Her and her husband lived in Wasilla, Alaska. And she said, I want you to book a flight, and I want you to come out here and stay with us. And so I did. And I was there for 5 weeks. When I got there, a couple days after I got there, I found out that I was pregnant. And that boyfriend was African American. My grandparents are old school, and they would not have been okay with that. And I knew that, I just knew that I couldn't come home, and I didn't want to be around him, and I didn't want to be around them, and I just knew that I needed to be with me, and I needed to grow up. And so I decided to stay out there. I decided to stay in Alaska. And a week after I just made that decision, and I called my family, and I told them that I was staying in Alaska, and I didn't tell them why, I miscarried. And I know that I would not have decided to stay out there if I had not been pregnant. And so that God, again, doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And so I came home from that 5 week vacation, and I sold all my stuff, and I packed two suitcases and my dog that I had at the time, and we got on a plane. That was November 8th, 2005. And I went to Wasilla, Alaska, and that woman at the time was doing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. She was doing what we were supposed to do, what we did. You know, she took me to meetings, and she put me in her pocket, and I lived with her and her husband for the first month that I was there. And then I got my own apartment, and I got a job in a little coffee shop. I waited 3 almost a month to get a sponsor, because I wanted to pick the right sponsor. And I did. I picked the right sponsor. I picked, she didn't want to sponsor me when I asked her. She asked her sponsor. She said, do I really have to sponsor this crazy girl? Because she is crazy. You know, and I was crazy. I mean, I was full on absolutely crazy. I had no idea what was wrong with me. I did not think that I was an alcoholic, but I knew that I couldn't drink staying in the house with this woman, because she was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she told me if I drank that I would have to leave, and I had no place to go. I was in Alaska in November. It's cold. It's dark. I knew that I needed to stay sober, and I did. And I picked the sponsor, and, you know, she was great. I had been to a meeting at the place where that would later become my home group. They were the Nazi group. They were very strict. They made you dress nice. You didn't cuss from behind the podium. If you were speaking behind the podium, you had on a skirt or a dress or a suit. If you were a guy, you wouldn't wear a dress. If you were a guy, I mean, if you wanted to, I guess you could. But you know, you had requirements, and they made you show up. And I remember picking my sponsor, my first sponsor, and I did not think that she was a member of that home group, and she tricked me, because she was a member of that home group. And I'm like, oh, crap. I'm going to have to do stuff here. And so, and I did. And I'm so grateful for that because I had, you know, I had a coffee, I had a job making coffee, like, when I first got there. And it was so great because it was an hour where my head didn't spin and I had to do something and I could think I was safe. I was safe for that 1 hour. And I was good at making coffee, and that was also what my job was. I worked in a coffee shop in Alaska. And so I got to meet people, and I got I got to feel welcomed and loved and safe and protected. And that's how I still feel in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm welcomed and loved and safe and protected no matter what. And I'm so grateful for that. Cause I did not behave well in sobriety. I mean, I did not, it is a miracle that I have not drank because I do not live life well. And I didn't for like the first 5 years of my sobriety, really. I mean, I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief. I stole money I was house sitting for one of my home group members, and I stole money, and, well, I stole change. My nickname was the Change Bandit because I was still change, because I didn't think you needed the change. And I had to make amends for that, and I have made amends for that. And, you know, and that's all because I live in fear, because I'm so afraid that God is not going to take care of me, that I'm not going to get what I want, or I'm going to lose something that I have. And I'm not going to be taken care of. And that's absolutely is not the truth. That is not the truth. I am always taken care of, and I am always safe and protected. And but I get that fear that I'm not going to be, that I'm going to be out in the street, or that I'm not going to get something that I want, or I'm going to lose something that I have. And God's got a different plan for me all the time. Every time God's got a different plan for me, and it's so much better than what my plan is. So much better. 100 million times better than what I think that I want and what I think that I need. And I know that, and I see that clearly throughout my story. I always see that, but it's always on the other side. And I forget when I'm in the moment, when I'm in that fear moment, and, you know, I just have to work. I just have to work through it, and I have to pray. And I've been taught from the beginning that I get down on my knees and I pray in the morning, and I think to ask God to keep me sober during the day, and I thank Him at night for keeping me sober, and I thank Him for the blessings that I have in my life, and I've done that consistently, and that's not picking up a drink. Those are the things that I've done consistently, and so that first sponsor that I had, she's no longer sober, and that was really hard because I could see that she wasn't doing the things that she had told me to do. And so the other women in the program scooped me up because they could see it too, and they scooped me up so I didn't have to go down that path with her, because another sponsee went down that path with her, and I'm so grateful that it wasn't me. That was right at my year, 1 year that happened. That first year, my dog that I took out there with me, she was my girl. She saved my life. I would have killed myself. I know for a fact if I hadn't had her when I was drinking, but I knew that nobody else would be able to take care of her like she took care of, like I took care of her. Really, I don't know if I took care of her that well, but I would take her with me. Like when I was going to the liquor store to get liquor, I would like take her with me, and she was a boxer. I'm like, I know if a cop pulls me over, this is how crazy, that it would be a cop that likes boxers, and so then they probably won't take me to jail. It's so ridiculous. Like, when I think about it, I'm like, I put that dog's life in danger, and she could have gone to the pound. If I had gotten pulled over, they would have taken her to the pound. It wouldn't matter if she was a boxer or a shih tzu. It wouldn't have mattered at all. But the first month I moved there, I found out she had stage 4 mast cell tumor and lymphoma. You know, and I got to love her and take care of her. That day, she wasn't even 6 years old when I had her put down. But I got to love her and take care of her, and she got to see that her mom was going to be okay. That's another God. Like, that was my first spiritual experience, which sounds really silly. Like, that was the first time that I felt God. Like, I was in that room holding her, and I felt God come in that room, and God was right there with me and with her. And I knew I was going to be okay. It's always at those moments, those really hard moments. It's either where, you know, when something bad is happening, when it's a sad moment, or it's usually when it's a sad moment, like when I don't really know how to show up, and I ask God to come in and just be with me and help me show up and do what He would have me do. I guess that my grandparents are my two most favorite people in the world. My grandfather, when I was, let's see, I'd been in Alaska for four years, four or five years. He fell and had a subdural hematoma, and he was in the hospital for 3 weeks. And my mom called and she's like, "Your grandpa's not going to make it." And so I came home, and I came home, and I got to show up at the funeral and be there for my family. And I got to take care of them and be there for them. And I'll tell you what, those are the two things when I got sober. The two things that I said that I would never ever make it through were losing my dog and losing my grandfather. And I'm standing here, and I made it through both of them. And when I was home for that visit, I felt more at home in Richmond than I'd ever felt. I made amends to that boyfriend that beat me up. I paid him back $100 that I'd stolen from him with interest. I made sure he knew that the interest was there. And I made amends to him, and I felt more at home in Richmond than I'd ever felt in my entire life. So I knew that if I needed to move back home, that I could move back home. Now, I hadn't planned on it, because that was not part of my plan. I didn't ever want to come back to Richmond. And so I went back to Alaska, and I'm living life not well. Like I said, I don't live life well. I'm living in a Connex shipping container on the side of the highway. I learned how to carve wood when I lived in Alaska, and so I was living in the shipping container where we had our wood shop. It's so funny. Eric's like, when I passed Eric, who's in my home group now. Oh, my home group is Alaska Cracker, and I met Eric in Alaska, and so they're driving down the road, and he's like, his friend's like, "That's where Ashley lives," and he was like, "In a box on the side of the highway," and I lived in a box on the side of the highway because I don't do life well. I still hadn't figured out how to do this thing. But, you know, at that time that I lived in that shipping container, I was the secretary of my home group. We met four times a week, and I had to be dressed four times a week at the four meetings, an hour early and stay an hour late. And I showed up, and because I knew what I was trained to do, and I knew that it would get better. I didn't know it was me that was making it worse. That I didn't know that it was me living in self-will, trying to do what I was going to do, darn it, and, you know, just get out of my way, because I'm still, like, just fighting. I just fight things tooth and nail, and I'm kicking and screaming the whole way, because I should have gotten another job, which I should have done, because carving wood and selling my wood stuff wasn't really making it work. But so I am living in this container. I bought an Airstream, which is what my Alaska dream was. I was going to buy an Airstream and live in it and go back to school. And I bought an Airstream and I was renovating it. I mean, I really was. Like, I did. I replaced the windows. I did all the stuff to it that was making it work. That was going to make me be able to live in it, and I was going to go back to school. But I'm still, like, I'm just struggling. And, like, inside there's this turmoil that I'm not really sure what it is. Now I know that it was because I was in self-will. I was me trying to do what I think is right. Because I'm not drinking and I'm not stealing. So I must be doing God's will. And it wasn't. And the roof started to leak. And I'm like, I don't know how to weld. That was the one thing that I didn't know how to do. So I'm going to drink. And this is 5 years sober. This is 5 years sober. And I'm like, I'm going to drink because then I can come back in and all the mess will be okay. Cause I just wasn't surrendered. And I called my friend and I called my sponsor and I called one of my friends. And if my sponsor had called me back, I think that I probably would have drank, not because of anything, but because at that point I couldn't hear anybody. But the friend that called me back, she said, "Ashley, we don't always make it back." And I'm like, "Well, I'm sure I will make it back, you know, because I'm invincible. I'll make it back." And she's like, "We don't always make it back." And she's like, "What is keeping you here?" And that's the thing. If my sponsor had said, "What is keeping you here?" and she meant in Alaska, I would have been like, "Screw you. What do you mean what's keeping me here? Don't you guys love me? Don't y'all want me here?" But then that friend said that to me, and she said, "Maybe it's time for you to go home." And she said it, and I could breathe again. And I didn't know how long I'd been holding my breath. I didn't know how close I was to that drink until she said that. And that's exactly what it was. It was time for me to go home. It was time for me to move back to Richmond and be of service to my family and be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous in Richmond. And, like, it was, I didn't know how long I'd been holding my breath and that I was that close to a drink for that long, but God was keeping me sober because his plan was better than what I had for me. And I called my sponsor the next morning and I said, "I think it's time for me to move home." And she said, "Ashley, I woke up this morning thinking the exact same thing." And I called my mom and she said, "I think that's a really good idea because your grandmother's not doing well." So I got to celebrate 5 years. 5 years of sobriety in Alaska. I got to finish out my secretary term. I got to take care of things there. I didn't leave with amends that hadn't been made. I didn't leave because I wanted to run, which I like to run. I left because that was the surrender. That was what God wanted me to do. And I had a job before I left Alaska. I had a place to, I moved with my mom for a month. Lived with my mom for a month, and I got an apartment, and, like, everything just fell back into place as soon as I got here, and I knew that was the right thing for me to do, and, my grandmother, I got to be with her. She had Parkinson's, and it was Parkinson's plus, and so it was it took her down fast. She ran my mom's company, my grandfather's company, ran all of us for a really long time, and it took her down really fast, and she passed away. It was a year this October that she's been gone, and I got to spend the last year with her, and I would go every Saturday and have dinner with her and her ladies at her little assisted living home, and I'm so grateful for that because I got to love her and take care of her, and she got to see that her girl was okay, because she used to tell me all the time, "You're not much, but you're all I got," and for a long time I was really resentful at that, but it was just my grandmother, and she loved me, and you know, so I got to do that, and I got to paint her nails the last week that she was here, because it was around Halloween time, and I painted them with orange sparkles, and she thought that was really cute, and, you know, I got to love her, and in the midst of that, when I moved back, I learned how to carve wood, and I looked up a guy that I went to elementary school, middle school, and high school with, who had a tree business, and he's now my husband. We started... It will be 2 years that we've been together this Thanksgiving. I let him court me. We went to coffee every Saturday for a month. I had no intention of getting into a relationship with him. I was focused on Alcoholics Anonymous and my family. I had no intention of getting into a relationship, but we went to coffee every Saturday for a month. We didn't kiss for the first month. By the time our first dinner date, I knew that I was going to screw it up. So I just followed my sponsor's direction, because I screw up relationships like you would not believe. And I didn't, knock on wood, I haven't screwed this one up, because I invite God and I invite my sponsor in. And we got married June 5th. June 8th. We got married June 8th. 7 of my friends from Alaska came down for the wedding. It was absolutely amazing. It was so amazing to have my Alcoholics Anonymous family here in Richmond, and from there come down and celebrate with us. And it was so great, and it was so much fun. You know, life is really good today. Now, I had one of the things that I know was why it was time for me to come home. But when I was in Alaska, when I would take a shower back here, when the water would hit my back, I felt numb, like I had a shot of Novocaine or something back there in my back. The doctors in Alaska are great, but I live by myself, and so I wouldn't have been able to take care of myself. They did a MRI, and I had a tumor this big in my thoracic spine area, and my poor husband, we had not been dating for very long, because it'll be 2 years in February, so we hadn't been dating very long, but he took care of me. He moved me out of my apartment and moved me into the house with him, and he'd never been around me sick, and I'm not a really good patient. You know, I was really scared of that, because they didn't know what it was, and again, that was when God was the closest to me. I knew no matter what it was, I was going to be okay. I knew that I would be okay through the surgery. I absolutely had to have pain medicine when I was in the hospital, and I knew that I was safe and protected. I was under the doctor's care. And I just knew I would be okay. I also got fired from a job right before, like literally a week before I had surgery. Because I also hadn't been going to work, because I was in pain, so I didn't follow the rules the way that you're supposed to follow the rules, and I didn't, so I lost that job, which was fine. I would have been out of work for a long time anyway, recovering from the surgery, but I was okay. Like, I didn't get fearful, because I invited God into that situation, and I prayed, and I knew that I would be okay, and I was absolutely okay. 3 months ago, is it 3 months? 3 months ago, I did my first sponsee, and I'm kind of all over the place, but whatever, I'm always all over the place. I think y'all get it. Like, I'm definitely alcoholic, and I definitely have some recovery in my life today. You know, I My first sponsee that I had when I moved back here, we're still friends. She actually, don't sponsor her anymore, but she just celebrated a year yesterday, which was really cool. She is the activities director at an assisted living home. And at the time, when like 3 months ago, I asked her how she got her job. She's the activities assistant at this job. And she told me, she said, Google activities assistant. So I Googled it, and the job that I now have today popped up because she, 2 days before I asked her that question, got promoted to the director. And so her activities assistant position was open. And I have the most amazing job ever in the world. I get to go to work, and I have 149 grandparents. And the day I am not a person that likes to work. Like I said, I'm lazy and I don't really like to do anything. I get to spend my day with a bunch of people's grandparents, and I show up for work. I show up when I don't want to show up, which is not very often because I really, really like going there. It's not a big high paying job, but my heart gets bigger every day when I'm there. And I could not have, if it wasn't for this program, I would not have that job. I wouldn't be able to show up. I really wouldn't have it because I found it through a friend that's in the program. And, you know, we're a great team. We are a great team. And I'm loved at that job. And I missed when I'm not there. Like, I couldn't be there Friday because my little cousin got married yesterday and I got to be in her wedding, which would not have happened if I was drinking. Cause I mean, they didn't really like me around. I don't blame them. Wasn't a good person to be around. I would be happy for a little while, but then I'm mad, angry, and panicked because I don't think I'm going to have enough to drink. It was an open bar, so I probably would have had enough drinks. So I would have made a good fool out of myself. But I couldn't go to work on Friday because I was in the wedding party, so I had things to take care of with my family, and I missed work. But I was allowed to miss work because there was a reason. I wasn't hungover and just didn't want to show up. Like, there was a reason I needed to show up for my family, and that's what I got to do. So it's pretty amazing that life is amazing, and it is good today, and not every day is easy. It still is hard. You know, it's where my husband has a tree business. Tree guys get kind of hungry in the winter because you're not as busy, you know, and there's a little bit of fear wrapped around that because my job's not, I don't make a lot of money. And, you know, we're just learning how to save and do all that stuff. But, you know, and so it's a little bit of fear there. But I know that we're going to be okay. I know that we're going to have food in our refrigerator and that I'll be able to cook him dinner. And I know that the bills will get paid and we'll have a roof over our head. And the dogs will have food because we have four dogs. Four dogs is a lot of dogs. I don't recommend it. A friend of mine in Alaska used to joke, he's like, you're never going to find a husband until you get rid of your dogs. Cause I also, after I lost that first one, I left Alaska with two dogs that I still have today. And they're my girls. So Olive is a boxer. And then Katie is a bug. She's a Boston Terrier pug mix. And they're my girls. I mean, we don't have kids. The dogs are our kids. And, he used to joke me like, you got to get rid of the dogs cause you have all that dog hair. You're never going to find a husband. And I have a husband who has two dogs that have long dog hair. And, you know, so there's lots of dog hair, and we have lots of love in the house, and, you know, it's wonderful. I mean, like I said, I had that miscarriage. I have a history of miscarriages, and because now I have this job and I have insurance, I've gotten to investigate that a little bit, and I'm getting to find out if we're going to be able to have a baby or not, which is amazing, because that's another thing that I've always wanted. I've always wanted to be a mom, and I know that God's going to provide that in some shape or form, whatever, you know, even if it's just the four-legged kids. And I don't like that, but I'll be okay with it. And I know God's plan is always better. It's always infinitely better. And if I had left when I wanted to leave, then I wouldn't have any of this. I wouldn't be standing here. I wouldn't get to be, I'm the secretary of my home group, which is amazing. And I didn't want to be that. I didn't want to have that job this time either because I don't really like, I don't know. Then I knew that I wouldn't be able to miss a meeting if I needed to or wanted to, you know, and it just so happened. Like I invited my sponsor into this situation and I didn't stand for the position when we had elections the first time, because I was kind of thinking that I may want to go find a different home group. And, the girl that got elected secretary got a job promotion. So Now I am the secretary of my home group, and I absolutely love it. I love that I come from good, structured AA that tells me to suit up and show up when I don't want to. When I absolutely don't want to, I have to be there, and I know how to do that. I know how to reach my hand out to an alcoholic, whether they're suffering or sober. I know how to be there. I know how to suit up and show up, and I know that because that's what I've been taught. My sponsor, I have good, strong sponsorship, and I'm great. My great grand sponsor has actually come in January to our anniversary talk, which is really cool. Like, that's so neat that I get to do that. You know, like, that we get to be in the same sponsorship family. And you know, I'm so grateful that I met Eric in Alaska, and that I get to have a home group that's structured after my home group in Alaska, which is amazing. And that's not anything that I could have done. I couldn't have orchestrated the things in my life if I had tried. And I know that God's in my life. I know that God has got a better plan for me, and that he has a good plan for me. And I can't wait to see what's next. I can't wait to see what's next. And that's never been the case in my life. I've always been so fearful of what was going to be behind the other door, or what people were going to think about me, or what was going to happen, or whatever. I mean, a million fears just run through me and run through my body. And because I correct the wrongs that I make, and I try to go through the day without lying, cheating, or stealing, I will fly off the handle. It's like I flipped the handle with my husband this morning, but it was only because of me. Like, we didn't have any coffee, and so I wake up and he tells me that, and I'm like, oh man, I'm a horrible wife. I didn't buy enough coffee for us to have coffee, but it comes out as you drank all the coffee, you know, and that's not how it is. It's me that I feel like I'm not being the wife that I should be. And he knows that, and he just lets me spin, which is so nice. You know, he loves me anyway. He loves me, and I'm grateful for that. I'm so grateful that God has given me a husband who is a lot like my grandfather. He even looks like my grandfather, which is so cool. My cousin's little boy saw a picture of Grandpa, and he's like, is that Joel? I'm like, no, that's Papa. And he's like, oh, which, you know, and I know that God's got a part of that. I know that... that if I just stay here, that amazing things happen. And I hope that you guys heard something out there that you needed to hear. And if not, then it was just, I just needed to be here tonight. And thank you, Sam. Thank you, Sam, for asking me to come out and talk. And I think that's all. Thanks.